It's Twin Bills, the Red Sox podcast from the sports department of the Providence Journal, featuring Red Sox beat writer Bill Koch, along with sports editor Bill Corey. Now, Twin Bills.
Hello and welcome to this week's Twin Bills Red Sox podcast. This is Bill Corey, the sports editor of the Providence Journal. With me is Bill Koch, our Red Sox writer, as the Red Sox season is winding down here in just a few days. Bill, there isn't much to take away from this Red Sox season on the positive side, but I would say that a few glimmers of hope, or at least two, showed themselves this past week, and that's with the two performances by young pitchers Tanner Houck and Nick Pivetta. So I guess there's something to be something to look forward to next year. Hopefully these guys continue their development and can be contributing members of a solid rotation.
Bill, what I've been looking forward to is the return of the podcast, honestly, and your return from furlough.
Yes, land, my last furlough
that's last right. week, and, yeah. and folks, that's why we weren't here. We weren't quitting on you. We've not quit on the season like the Red Sox did long ago.
Right, like they did in the end of July.
Pretty much. You know, we are excited and happy to be back the last week of the season. Yes, so some positives that you could take into next year. You know, certainly some pitching depth potentially here emerging. Tanner Houck has had two very good starts coming up from the alternate site. Nick Pivetta looked pretty good Tuesday night in his Red Sox debut. And you know, I guess in a season that has been so difficult for the Red Sox, where they've been out of it, you know, virtually from the start, you're just looking for encouraging signs. You're trying to spin this forward to 2021. And, you know, I won't say that the bar is lowered. I think that's unfair because I think they have performed better. They have pitched better recently. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think just a return to competence, really, you know, not necessarily to excellence, but to competence is sort of welcome and, you know, sort of noteworthy considering, you know, what we had to watch for the first, you know, maybe 40 games or so.
Right. Well, you made that point in your column on the website this morning, your post game column, and it's a good one. You're right. This is not the greatest rotation in the world, so to speak. But it is hopefully more like what we would expect to see, especially if these guys are your like number four and five, or maybe number three and four starters. Moving forward, I caught a little bit of the post game coverage last night, and they were talking to catcher Christian Vasquez about this very item, about, you know, next year's rotation. And, you know, maybe he was a little too optimistic. You know, he was counting on Chris Sale being there early on and being as effective as he was in past years. But, you know, if you just want to go with that for a minute and you think of a rotation with Chris Sale and Eduardo Rodriguez at the top, some mix of Tanner Houck, Martin Perez and Nick Pivetta at the bottom three, that certainly is a good rotation, probably above average rotation. I'm not sure it's the kind of rotation that you're going to, you know, sort of roll through the season with 95 wins and get you into the playoffs and go deep in the playoffs, but it's certainly far better than what we've seen this year anyway.
Far better. Huge improvement, especially if you're able to get Chris Sale back in a reasonable period of time from his Tommy John surgery.
Oh, and Nathan Eovaldi too, which I failed to mention. So sure, yeah.
If you're able to get Eduardo Rodriguez back from his myocarditis, if he can have some sort of semblance of an off-season program. Mm-hmm. If Nathan Eovaldi can approach 30 starts, that's something he's only done once. Yep. in his career. Mm-hmm. If Martin Perez can be consistent, if you can get a full year out of Tanner Houck or Nick Pivetta.
A lot of ifs there.
A lot of ifs, and I think that is the general point that I tried to make this morning, is the last four World Series winners, and really if you want to look back at the four World Series winners the Red Sox have produced this century, mm-hmm. what they've all had in common is stud starting pitching.
Yeah, you need it. You need to have those studs at the top of the rotation.
You know, and this is, I understand that where Chaim Bloom is coming from with the Rays, because of limited resources, they had to build their pitching staff differently. using the opener, mixing and matching, you know, trying to find guys off the waiver wire or guys who are first-round picks previously who it didn't necessarily work out for them with their original teams and try to salvage something there. But if you're going to win at the elite level of the sport, I think if you look back at the last four World Series champions and at the four Red Sox World Series champions, you're looking at pitchers like Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling, Josh Beckett, John Lester. You know, over the last four seasons, guys like Lester, David Price, Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg. These are the guys who have pitched in and been on World Series winners. You know, and so I think you need special when you get to those big games in October. You need guys who could take the ball, go out there, make it easier on your bullpen and on your offense. And you know, I think I just think back to 2018, the most recent Red Sox champions. Mm-hmm. You know, look at what David Price did in that postseason.
Right.
Look at how much you paid for David Price. $217 million.
Yep.
That's why you paid that much for him. Look at what Max Scherzer did for the Nationals last year. $210 million contract. You know, Steven Strasburg's $175 million pitcher. John Lester's $155 million pitcher. These guys get that sort of money for a reason because they are essentially, in baseball world, priceless. You know, and so I look at the Red Sox and you look at Chris Sale. He's the most expensive pitcher they have at $145 million. He's not going to make 30 starts next year. He's still going to be coming back from his Tommy John surgery.
Right. It would be overly optimistic to think he's going to be there right from the day one, right from day one, and be as effective as we remember him.
You wonder how much Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be able to work. He's gone from 200 innings to zero. He's probably not going to go back to 200 again. You know, as I said earlier, Nathan Eovaldi's never made 30 starts. You know, only once since his 2011 debut. And so, I guess this is really the long way of saying, Bill, that I think they still need to add. Even though you've seen some encouraging signs, and it looks like you have some depth now, I still think you need to add to this rotation, and I think it would be a good idea to add from the top, not from the bottom or in the middle.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that they will. You know, I think that from the comments from Tom Werner and other officials in the last few weeks about how, you know, this season was, you know, really kind of unacceptable, and they're not going to put up or, you know, accept similar results. To me, that means they're going to go out and get some pitching, some top of the rotation pitching in the off season. And if you do that, if you do get that big stud or a legit number one or two, and you add to the rotation that we think we're going to have next year in terms of Chris Sale and Erod and Eovaldi and Hauk and Pivetta and Martin Perez. That's a lot of arms, but as we know, things happen. You know, people don't come back from injury as quickly as from surgery as quickly as we think. People get hurt. Obviously, as you pointed out with Nate Eovaldi, he tends to get hurt now and then and misses some games. But yeah, I think they absolutely do need to go and get another top of the rotation kind of pitcher. You know, the challenge, of course, now is you've got Chaim Bloom in the driver's seat, so to speak, and he was working with a mandate of, you know, trying to stay under the competitive balance tax. So now, do you throw that philosophy out the window and go back up the Brinks truck and sign the best pitcher on the market for whatever? Because that would seem to fly in the face of all this stuff you've been doing over the past season.
Well, I mean, obviously the pandemic is going to be a significant factor in terms of teams and their finances and what the market looks like.
Right.
You know, I would go back to something that I've said throughout this season and been pretty consistent with. You're the Red Sox. You're one of the haves. You're not one of the have-nots.
Right.
You know, everyone in baseball is struggling, and I understand that. You know, you're going to take a massive financial loss just like everybody else is, and I understand that.
Yep.
But you're the Red Sox. This is going to come back at some point. We're going to get back to normal, whether it's late in 2021 or in 2022 or in 2023, whenever it is. You know, we're going to have a vaccine or some sort of therapeutic treatment. And COVID-19 is going to be a thing of the past. It is. It's going to be.
We certainly hope. Yeah, it certainly will at some point. And we certainly hope it'll be sooner rather than later.
And once that happens, the Red Sox are going to go back to being one of the most flush financial teams in baseball. You know, so now could be your chance if you see another franchise with an elite pitcher who's struggling financially to pounce on them, to make a trade, to take on that huge contract.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe now is the chance to get a free agent pitcher under market value because no one else can bid more. You know, this offseason offers the Red Sox some opportunity in that way,
sure.
I think. And what I truly hope is that they realize that this is a chance, even though they are suffering in the short term, this is a chance for them to be aggressive and to maybe take advantage of some of the difficulties that their opponents are having. You know, and maybe sign someone who's 85 or 90% of Gerrit Cole for half the price.
Yeah.
Because that's what the market could bear this offseason. So I really hope that the Red Sox are open to all avenues. I really hope that they are aggressive in pursuing upgrades, whether it's, you know, especially in the rotation, but certainly to the lineup as well, because I think they could have a golden opportunity here this offseason to do so.
Well, you know, you brought up Gerrit Cole, and that was sort of an area I wanted to get into a little bit, and it kind of makes sense coming off our discussion here of the importance of a top-of-the-rotation pitcher. You know, when you're going into the playoffs, as the Yankees will be, and obviously the Rays will be as well, they look to be the top two teams in the American League East. It is so important and valuable to have somebody like Gerrit Cole at the top of the rotation because, as you know, in the postseason, you're not carrying a long rotation. And if the schedule lines up right, you know, you can get three starts out of your top guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be great if you had somebody like Gerrit Cole to give those starts to, whereas the Rays are kind of doing it with they also have some pitching as well. But through and through, they don't have the lineup and the depth that the Yankees, at least on paper, have. And so it'll be an interesting postseason, I think, when we get those two teams in the East. It looks like the Central will be the White Sox and the Twins, and out West it's the A's and the Astros, and then looks like the Indians and Blue Jays are fighting for a wild card, as well as the Angels look to be a couple of games off as well. But the Red Sox need to do what? Lose two more games and they'll cement their standing as the worst team in the American League East.
Yeah, two losses to the Orioles and they would finish in last place. You know, that depending on where you stand in the tanking argument, Bill Corey.
Yeah.
I'm not a tanking. Good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm not a tanking proponent, but you've come this far. Don't ruin it now.
No, you and I are, I think you and I are in agreement on this. I think it's beneath an organization like the Red Sox to tank for a draft pick. I think it's disgusting. And I also think that in baseball, that draft pick is so much more uncertain than any other sport.
It's very tenuous. It's not football and it's not basketball. You know, these guys that you draft, who knows? It takes them several years before they are really major league ready, if they ever are. And we've seen plenty of stories of guys who were drafted in the early rounds in Major League Baseball and never really gotten to the big leagues.
You know, I also think that, you know, injuries are such a huge component in baseball. You know, let's say the Red Sox, and I don't think this can happen mathematically, but let's say they did get the first pick and they took Kumar Rocker, the right-handed pitcher from Vanderbilt.
Right.
Kumar Rocker's thrown 2,838 sliders at Vanderbilt in his career. You know, and he's had however many games where he's, you know, thrown 110, 120 pitches.
Yeah.
How long is it going to take for his elbow to explode? If that happens, God forbid, and I hope he has a 12 to 15 year major league career, he's sensational.
Right.
You know, bright, bright talent.
Yep.
But you can't guarantee he's never going to get hurt.
No,
you don't know that.
Right.
You don't know based on his workload in college that he's not going to get hurt. And so if you're sort of putting all your eggs in the tanking basket, and we're going to have high draft picks and draft pitching and develop these guys, and they're going to be here in 2 or 3 years. There is no guarantee that that's going to happen.
Right.
And so at that point, if you're just losing for the sake of losing and for a draft pick, it's just a flawed strategy. I mean, just look at what happened to the 76ers this year in the NBA playoffs.
Right. Yeah.
They're sort of at a stalemate here now with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and they don't really have a road forward.
Right, and they're not playing anymore, by the way.
They're done. Right. They're not a championship team.
Right.
They're going to have to break this up or go in a different direction this offseason. So tanking just on its face, I reject that. I don't think it's a way to build a winner. And I think it's beneath an organization like Boston when you have their resources and their history. I don't think it's something that you should need to do to build a winner.
Before we get too far away from this discussion, I do want to make note that the Red Sox figured out a way to beat the Yankees finally in their last series. They won the last game. Previously, the Yankees had won was it 10 in a row against the Red Sox?
12 in a row against the Red Sox.
12 in a row.
10 in a row this season.
They had a 10-game, 10 game this season. And
it's sad that we can't keep track of that.
Well, it is sad because it's so meaningless now for the Red Sox. But, the Yankees do look like they got over that. They were skidding not too long ago and gave people who were not Yankees fans a little bit of hope that they may fall out of the race. But they're really just too good. And they do have such a deep lineup that Gary Sanchez home run to tie it in the was it the bottom of the ninth
Friday
top of the ninth against Matt Barnes, that was just a microcosm of you think, oh boy, this is it, they're finally going to do it, they're going to beat the Yankees and end the streak, and then no.
Those people who thought the Yankees were in trouble, were their initials Bill Corey?
I don't know if I thought they were in trouble, but I was holding out, just the possibility that maybe they would have fallen out of the race, but I should know better. They're too good this year. I mean, I think I anointed them the American League East champions on like August 1st or something like that.
So. The way it was going, you weren't wrong, and the way it's going now, you wouldn't necessarily bet against them in the playoffs. And I think a huge part of that is that they're healthy again. DJ
right.
LeMahieu is back. Giancarlo Stanton is back. Aaron Judge is back.
Judge is back. Yeah.
All those guys were in the IL at some point. And I know the Yankees dealt with a lot of injuries last year and still managed to win the division. You do get to a point, though, where it is critical mass, and you just can't go forward. You've just lost too many people. But generally, if you give it some time and you manage to get that talent back on the field, that talent is going to show up. And I think, we saw that with New York winning 10 in a row, winning 12 straight against the Red Sox for the third time in franchise history, the first time since the 1950s.
Wow.
By winning the first two games of that series. Yeah. Thankfully, the Red Sox were able to salvage the Sunday game behind Tanner Houck, who, in my mind, certainly has been one of the bright spots here in the last couple weeks. He has one start left on the season and definitely gives you some hope for the future.
It's been great watching him. I mean, he's 2-0. He's thrown 11 innings, no earned runs. He's looked like he has command of his pitches out there, knows what he's doing. Hopefully this is a sign of things to come in terms of his performance. Nick Pivetta on Tuesday night, also very encouraging, struck out 8. Was generally in command out there. So looking ahead, hopefully, as we've said, they can add a top of the rotation arm. They've got Chris Sale coming back, hopefully healthy at some point early in the season, and Eduardo Rodriguez Martin Perez, I think that they have the makings there for a good staff if they can add one more, and who knows, maybe they might find themselves another bat in the offseason as well, now that they've unloaded Mitch Moreland and made some room under the cap. So Bill, let's shift our focus a little bit here to McCoy Stadium, which has not seen any actual baseball games this year, at least not regulation games. It's been the alternate training site for the Red Sox, where they've had prospects, and then some other players that have come through and gotten ready to play in the big leagues. So they are wrapping it up this week. I believe Friday is the last day of activity at McCoy, and obviously you are planning to be there to kind of witness the end of sort of an era. And it really kind of is a sad ending chapter to me. Now, we should say, I guess there is a caveat here that we are assuming that the Polar Park in Worcester will be up and running in time, even though it had been delayed by something like 5 weeks. We don't know for sure. There may be some activity next year. We just don't. We haven't gotten anything official.
Yeah, we don't know if there's even going to be a minor league season. We have no idea if there are going to be fans in ballparks. Like I said earlier, the hope is that COVID is behind us by then. In the minor leagues, huge difference from the major leagues, obviously, is the TV contract. And if there is no in-person attendance, minor league franchises as business entities cannot survive.
There's no money.
There's no money.
Right.
They cannot survive. They cannot open the doors. They would actually lose more money by playing games with no fans.
Right.
The only reason that you see major league teams on the field right now is because of the TV contracts.
Yeah.
It's that simple. But I would expect the Woo Sox to debut in April 2021. I think right now that is the plan. I do not think that you're going to see any more baseball of the formal kind at McCoy Stadium.
You know, it's kind of a it's a sad exit for many reasons. Obviously, just the fact that they're leaving Pawtucket after all these years. Excuse me. Is sad in itself, but the fact that the Rhode Island fan base didn't get to watch baseball this year because of the pandemic, makes it even harder to kind of swallow, because this was the opportunity to get out there and experience it for the last time and sort of say goodbye to the Paw Sox. And unfortunately, with the pandemic, there were no games. And the folks over there did a great job with the dining on the diamond, and
which continues, by the way, which continues,
right? And in fact, they expanded it. They're dining on the diamond at the famous Field of Dreams ballpark or baseball field. Because it was such a hit here, and I guess there's some partnership with a group out there as well. But it's going to be odd driving by McCoy Stadium next season and not having the Paw Sox or not having any team there.
I'm going to be writing a column about this later in the week, just about my experiences at McCoy and just sort of looking back. And I know, Bill, you and I were on the phone. Was it Monday, Tuesday, earlier
Monday,
this week?
Monday, yeah.
You're just sort of talking about maybe some ideas for that. And I guess I find it strange every day when I drive to Fenway Park and I take Route 95 and I look to my left and I look at the Apex site and I see it mostly empty.
Yeah.
Just with the one tire distributor there. Otherwise, it's sort of the old Apex building, and it's a parking lot, and
right.
There's nothing there. And you think about what it could have looked like if there was a deal there to be made. And I think Mark Patinkin, our colleague, wrote a very strongly worded column over the weekend that appeared, I think, in the Sunday Journal, sort of going over the political side of this, and how a deal with the Paw Sox was probably there for the taking, wasn't made for various reasons, and now we sort of live with the fallout of the political side. For me, I'm going to look more at the personal side, I think. The fact that we are losing this, and it has been such a big part of us for so many of us. It has been our link to the Red Sox, our personal connection with so many players who have come through there,
sure,
and ended up in Boston and ended up being household names with the Red Sox and ended up being World Series champions with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
It's so many nights for us, whether it was with our parents or with our grandparents or with our brothers or sisters in the summer, spending very little money being entertained, watching professional sports. You know, it's just it is sad to think that they are going to be sent off in relative anonymity at the end of this week.
Yeah.
It's something so far away from what they had planned, and it's something so far away from what they deserve.
Right. No, nobody could have envisioned what happened, certainly. But you're right. I mean, it's something that growing up in this area, I think we've taken for granted, you know, all those years of very good baseball, watching prospects, whether it was Wade Boggs, whether it was Ellis Burks, whether it was Nomar, Mo Vaughn, you know, all of these Red Sox players that came through Pawtucket. you know, I go back to watching them there in the early 80s, early to mid 80s. And, you know, once a year, the Boston Red Sox would come down and have an exhibition against and, you know, you always wanted to get that ticket if you could, because then you'd see the Boston Red Sox stars playing in McCoy Stadium. And obviously that they haven't done that in many years. But, you know, and the fact that McCoy was so accessible, you know, it wasn't an expensive night out. You got to see top-notch baseball. You know, even in more recent times, players who were rehabbing would come down and play a few games in McCoy, and you know, you'd go get to see Manny Ramirez or David Ortiz or Pedro or whatever. Manny didn't want to leave, of course. Manny loved it here.
Manny liked it so much he wanted to stay.
Right. But to not have that option anymore, you know. I mean, not that you don't have the option. We can certainly get in our car and drive to Worcester, but for most of us, that's a much longer drive.
Right.
And I don't know how many fans around, you know, Providence, Pawtucket, South County, what have you, are going to want to make that trek. I think initially there'll be some novelty to Polar Park, and I think it'll draw some people who want to just see it and stuff. But you know, it won't be the same for the folks in Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts who really just had it next door for all these years.
Yeah, certainly not for us.
Right.
You know, I definitely think that region is going to embrace it. And I think that region is going to find all the things that we found over the last three generations.
Yep.
You know, the fact that you are able to see players who are close to the major leagues and guys who you know and guys who you've heard about, you know, and you are able to see high-quality baseball in a beautiful stadium for a lot less money than you would pay to go to Fenway Park.
Sure.
You know, that's probably going to be a lot more convenient for you if you live in Western Mass, and it's
right.
A lot shorter drive than it is. You know, it could be a couple hours to Fenway from you know, extreme Western Mass.
Sure.
You know, it's a lot easier to get to Worcester. You know, it's definitely... It's something that when you're doing it right, and the Paw Sox did it right for so many years, you become ingrained in the community. You're a piece of it. You know, your outreach is such that you know the business owners and the school principals.
Sure.
And whatever else. And you know, I fully expect the folks there, if they follow the model that Ben Mondor established in Pawtucket, I fully expect the folks there to find the same thing in Worcester. And you know, a lot of this is just, I'm sad that we won't have that anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're jealous that Worcester is getting that brand new stadium that you know, at one time was on the books to have here in Rhode Island. So yeah, you know, to watch them go in this manner, not having any games this summer, it's just you know, it's just kind of sad.
It is.
Overall.
It is.
So, Bill, before we wrap up here, let's touch upon the fact that there will be baseball in Fort Myers for a little while with the player development program that the Red Sox were talking about in the last few days. So tell us about this. What is this? This is a it's not really spring training. It's more like fall training. But what's the plan down in JetBlue Park?
Still some hoops to jump through, obviously.
Yep.
As Ben Crockett said yesterday, he spoke with us, the Red Sox vice president of player development.
Yep.
You know, still some hoops to jump through from a health side, you know, with Florida Health Department officials. But what the Red Sox hope for is a six-week camp for prospects at JetBlue Park. You know, probably going to feature somewhere around 50, 60 players. You know, going to be some guys who have been here at the alternate site, I would imagine. Going to be some other guys who didn't have a chance to work this off season, and who were, you know, going through their workouts at home. You know, or with friends or with family or, you know, whoever's throwing them batting practice in their backyards or catching their bullpens. You know, a little more formalized setting where you're going to be around the Red Sox coaching staff and have a chance to maybe get a couple months of development and physical evaluation. You know, I know it's an important time for a lot of teams. In a normal year, you have fall instructs, and then you have the Arizona Fall League, which has been canceled. You know, but it's important to see your guys and how they sort of match up amongst themselves and against people in other organizations. You know, so there's a possibility that you're going to have teams who are in the normal Grapefruit League at their complexes. There's a possibility that the Red Sox could play some games against some of those teams. You know, all that is subject to health protocols, of course. You know, but the Red Sox, much like with the alternate site, will welcome any sort of development that they can get for their prospects in what, for a lot of those guys, has been a completely lost year.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder if Eduardo Rodriguez would be taking part in that. You know, I'm not sure if he would qualify or not, but, you know, he's certainly not on the he's not on the Red Sox roster this year, so I wonder.
Well, what's happened, and the Players Union has advanced this, and I have to believe that this is going to get through. Any players who are on the 40-man roster at the end of the season will not be allowed to participate in this in these development camps, or whatever they're going to call them.
I'm
calling them development camps. Now they could call them, you know, Florida Instructs or whatever it may be.
Okay.
You know, if that's the case, Rodriguez will be on the 40.
Yeah.
Someone like Bobby Dalbec is
on the
40. Someone like Tanner Houck is on the 40. You know, so you're looking at minor leaguers, you know, guys who have been there, like Nick York, who is currently at McCoy Stadium, like Tristan Casas, who's currently at McCoy Stadium. You know, their last two first-round picks in Boston. In 2018 and in 2020. Maybe Cameron Cannon gets a call. Their second-round pick from 2019, or Matthew Lugo, who was another top draft pick in 2019. Both of those guys have not been at McCoy Stadium. Maybe they get called up for this. You know, so it's just any chance that organizations get to evaluate their players, whether it's major league players or prospects, it is like found money for them.
Especially
in a year like this.
Yep.
You know, so I would expect that once they finalize those health protocols and they're able to finalize some dates, the Red Sox will start looking at their player pool, you know, guys who are off the 40-man roster, and, you know, maybe start prioritizing who they want to see there, you know, whether it's for the immediate future or a little bit more of the long-term future.
Yep. So, Bill, the Red Sox are wrapping up their final homestand of the season. They've got the Orioles tonight. It is Wednesday. They've got the Orioles tomorrow, and then they head down to take on the Braves in Atlanta for the last three games of the season. So let me ask you now. You've been covering the Red Sox at Fenway Park with this season in these strange circumstances. What's it been like lately covering the Red Sox in Fenway Park when we've been seeing the temperatures dip you know, fall seems to be coming quicker than normal this year?
I can tell you that Sunday was really cold. you know, we had a northeast wind coming in off the Charles, and typically when that happens, it's a difficult watch. you know, and I also think that you know, you're looking ahead at the fall, and you're thinking about COVID protocols, and normally on a cold day, you would close the windows in the press box.
Right, and they have these giant windows that you can open or close, which normally this time of year they're usually closed.
On a tough day like that, where the wind is coming in at about 15 miles an hour, you would definitely have them closed.
Yeah.
You know, but now, because of health protocols, you have them open at all times. And so it was a little chilly. I was a little unprepared.
Right.
You know, my hands were a little cold, and I was a little miserable and felt a little soft, frankly. As someone who grew up in Rhode Island and in the Northeast, you know, I should not be cold at a baseball game in September. I was embarrassed and a little bit of ashamed of myself. You know, I remember thinking that my 20-year-old self would probably slap my 40-year-old self and say, "What's wrong with you, old
man? Right.
you know, toughen up a little bit, thicken that blood, will you please?
I'm sure it's tougher when the games don't mean anything. You know,
it's
one thing if you're in a pennant race and you're, you know, you're glued to the action on the field, but obviously that is not the case this year, and you're truly just sort of just watching them play out the string at this point.
Yeah, it is difficult. You know, but I guess I would say that, you know, over the last couple of weeks, and a lot of this is tied to the pitching situation, the Red Sox have looked like a more representative major league team. You know, I just know as well as I do, and I think you've been on board with this with me from the start. I'm not a buyer on the opener as a concept. I'm not a buyer on a lot of the pitchers that they brought in. I think that a lot of this has just been throwing things against the wall and hoping that some of it sticks for 2021. I don't necessarily believe that the Red Sox made a good faith attempt to compete this year. I think all this was about resetting the tax and trying to look forward to next season.
Yeah. Yep.
I think we've seen a lot of that play out on the field. And so, you know, yes, the last couple of weeks, the last 16 games, they're 9-7. They have a 3.16 ERA in the starting rotation. They've looked like a Major League Baseball team. It's been a lot better to watch.
Sure.
You know, hopefully that continues over the last few games here. You know, but generally, I don't think that I'm going to allow recent impressions to paper over the fact that this has been a difficult year. It's been tough to watch, and it's been very strange at Fenway with no fans and sort of being in that environment.
Well, a couple more games to sit through, in person anyway. Then the season mercifully comes to a close, I believe, on Sunday is their last game.
Correct.
Bill, we will get together one more time at least next week to kind of put a bow on the season, talk about our final impressions, look ahead to what next year may bring. But, you know, clearly if there is big news in the offseason, we may have to convene an emergency Twin Bills.
We had to do that a few times last offseason.
Right. Those weren't good news type of things either, right?
They certainly were not.
All right, Bill, thanks again. Good luck and stay warm here in the last couple of nights. Weather's supposed to kind of break a little bit here. So
it'll be fine.
It should be a little bit better. And we will get together once again after the Red Sox season has ended.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Bill.